This wasn't even splatter. This was like just spaghetti fell off my fork onto the page of the book. And I'm like, oh no, oh no, oh no.
Just full spaghetti.
This is why you shouldn't read and read at the same time.
If only we could take our love of reading to a new level.
Well, I've always wanted to start a book club.
Book club!
For
masochists and other deviants.
Hello and welcome to the Book Club for Masochists, where we read and discuss all the genres and types of books, regardless of our actual interest in them.
Every month, we read books from a new, randomly picked genre. Then on the podcast, we discuss our reading choices, experiences, opinions, appeal factors, and other related topics as friends and library workers.
In this, episode number 146, we are not discussing the genre at all. We are discussing the topic of bookish food and drink. Our script says we are talking about the genre of bookish food and drink. And I was like, wait, no, wait, what? No.
I just want to say you can't blame this one on me. This is definitely not my idea.
Oh, okay. Yeah, fine.
Wait, who do we get to blame for the idea? Because I'm pretty sure that was none of us.
I was going to blame Megan, but I don't know.
I don't know. I think this one came from a ghost.
Maybe.
I think, honestly, all of them come from ghosts at this point.
Our spreadsheets are all haunted.
Yeah.
They're just like picking our genres for us by haunting. All right. Let's do who we are.
My name is RJ. I'm a librarian in Vancouver, British Columbia.
My name is Matthew. I'm also a librarian in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, which is located on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded land of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Stolo people.
My name is Anna. I'm a librarian in Las Vegas, Nevada, USA, which is located on the traditional homelands of the Nuuvi Southern Paiute people, including the Las Vegas Paiute tribe and the Moapa Band of Paiutes.
And my name is Megan. I'm an archivist in the National Capital Region of Canada, which is also unceded in traditional territory of the Algonquin Anishinaabeg.
Announcements.
What do we got?
I think just the book list.
Okay.
Oh, wait. No. Episode 150. Episode 150 is coming up. And what would you, our wonderful listeners, like us to talk about in it? Let us know if you have questions for us, if you have topics you want us to discuss that wouldn't be a full episode, I guess. Anything, just feel free to tweet at them at us, send us to them on Instagram or Facebook or email or however you want to communicate with us. Also, just a reminder, we're not on Spotify anymore. So, I don't know how you're listening to us. If you used to listen to us on Spotify, but, tell people that we're not there anymore, I guess.
Give them other options.
Yes. Uh-huh. There are other places you can find us, but we have stopped using that platform.
We'll list some other options at the end of the episode, so you got to get to there.
It's true.
It's in the show notes, or it's on the website. It's somewhere.
Archie, are you okay?
This... I mean, this all assumes that they just found this episode, like, at random. Somebody just left it open on a public computer or you know.
I was actually imagining like it being on like a USB keychain that they just found in the woods or like, you know, burnt to a CDR.
Y'all, I just spilled hot tea all over myself laughing.
Oh, no. Oh, we're off to a great start. At least that's related to this week's topic.
Yeah, it is. It is. So the book list.
Yeah, quickly, the book list. So in the show notes of this episode, as with all of our episodes in the last year or two, there is a book list of books by authors of color. For this non-genre episode, it's a retroactive list. So it's a list of a genre we covered in the past. And the genre or topic for this week's book list, or this episode's book list, is nonfiction relationships and romance. So you'll find a list of books on that topic by Black, Indigenous, and people of color authors. I tried to get a pretty good spread because a lot of relationships romance books are pretty strictly about heterosexual monogamous couples. So there's also some books in there about polyamory and being single and friendship. So check those out. I would say also a few of them this episode don't 100% match like the sort of advice template that people I would think of relationships books as being, but I think they're all relevant if you're interested in the topic. Check them out.
Great. Thank you.
Very cool. All right. So I've split the questions up for this episode into two sort of avenues that we can take. The first of which is food and drink while we're reading.
No, you've got to say it as it's written in here, please.
Comestibles while reading.
Thank you.
Or comestibles in the book.
What is comestibles?
Something which you can consume. Something that you might ingest.
Is there a difference between comestibles, consumables, and ingestibles?
I believe you might find slightly different aspects to it. Like, I think you can ingest things you might not necessarily be consuming, but mm-hmm. will just pass through you.
Sure.
I think the best way to phrase this really is comestibles while consuming content.
Uh-huh. Yes, obviously, because there could be audiobooks and yeah. Mm-hmm.
True.
I just wanted the alliteration.
Thank you. I knew that, but I had to like legitimize it.
True, but yes.
It's a real $10 word. Comestibles. So where are we starting?
All right. So the first question is, do you eat or drink while you're reading? No one is willing to say yes.
I would say rarely. I think it used to be much more common. I think this topic, I've been not sure what I've wanted to say in general about food and drink and reading. And I think part of it is because eating and drinking while reading for me has not happened as much since the pandemic. Because I used to do that mostly in coffee shops or at my favorite breakfast place. I would get a big breakfast and bring a book. Right now, I'm not doing that much reading and eating at the same time at home. Usually, I'm like watching a video while I'm eating. I think for whatever reason, I guess because maybe I feel like I'm more likely to have someone see me do it. But if I'm at work and I'm eating lunch, I'm not reading at the same time. I will eat on my lunch break and then I will read. They are two separate activities. I use the first half of my lunch break for eating and the second half for reading.
That's fair. I find I have trouble with like positioning the device I'm reading on or the book I'm reading so that, you know, it's open and I'm able to see it and it's not falling over while I'm eating. And then like turning pages can sometimes be a little bit more complicated, but it's still something I like to do when I'm not with other people, then it wouldn't be rude. I do miss, like, the coffee shop read for sure, but I think I'm a pretty consistent, like, coffee tea, even if I'm just at home.
Yeah, RJ, I feel you a lot on that one. That is very much my experience, too. I both do diner and coffee shop, and read is, like, my, like, key and primary and favorite way to do food and reading at the same time. So I don't do it nearly as much anymore. The other thing I notice is that I either, like you say, Megan, it's kind of hard to like juggle the consuming and the reading, the consuming of both products at the same time, food products and like written products or word products at the same time. So like I frequently can kind of do one more than the other. So I frequently, when I'm trying to eat while reading, I mostly eat and then I read like half as or a third as much as I would have gotten through if I were just actually just reading and not trying to do both. If it's truly something that I have to pay no attention to, like just some chips or something like that, then like it takes away from the enjoyment of getting to have chips or whatever other snack it is, because I just do it mindlessly because my mind is on the book. And then I'm like, but wait, how did I go through my entire serving of chips? But I wanted those and they were so delicious and I didn't even notice. So I don't know. There's a little problem in there, but I would say then that puts like coffee drinking and reading at my very top of like what I want to do for food and or consumables of some kind and reading.
Is coffee drinking just at the top of your consumables in general though, Anna?
Look, I know you like to give me a hard time about drinking coffee and really liking my coffee, but I am not that much of a, like, coffee snob.
I don't. Do I?
No. I know. It's fine. It's the kind of giving me a hard time that we both agree on.
I would get it ready for you.
I know you would. Oh, sweetie. It's okay.
Although I wasn't actually allowed to grind it because I didn't know how to, you wouldn't let me do that part.
Yeah, no, it's not the right. It's fine. Honestly, I'll just prep it myself. It's all good, babe. I really appreciate it.
I think there is a difference between eating a meal versus like eating a snack. And so, yeah, like eating, you know, something that you use a knife and fork with versus eating a package of chips are two very different things. Although, I guess depending on the sort of chip-like product you're eating, maybe you should be using cutlery if you're reading a book. Don't want to get Dorito dust or Cheezos. Cheezos aren't a thing.
Cheezos. Cheezies and Cheetos.
Cheezos, yep. That's what they're called in Canada.
That's your custom blend. Where you buy a bag of Cheezies and a bag of Cheetos and mix them together.
For whatever reason, that sounds awful.
Yeah. I mean, because Cheezies are vastly superior, and so every bite is sort of a mystery. It's like if you've ever heard about people like mixing a bowl of M&Ms and Skittles together as a prank.
That is
evil.
Yes. Horrible. Why would you do that? Cheezies and Cheetos are at least like visibly different.
Yeah, I feel like I actually might prefer to eat like a meal with a knife and a fork with a book. But it also depends so much on the meal. But I think part of the reason I don't read while I'm eating lunch at work is usually because my lunch is a sandwich. And it feels very risky to like be eating it one-handed and it may all come apart. Whereas if I was eating something with a fork, it would be easier to keep my other hand on the book.
Even that you don't want a knife and fork meal. You want like a spoon meal.
Yeah.
That is not necessarily like splashy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is why breakfast was perfect for this. I would go to my favorite breakfast place and get just like eggs and veggie sausage and toast. And it's all like stuff that's really easy to cut and eat one-handed. That's Café du Soleil in Vancouver if you're interested in my favorite breakfast place. Café du D-E-U-X, not Café du D-U, because there are two of them on the same street in the same neighborhood. And
wow.
Wow.
Café Two Suns is the better one, in my opinion.
Yes.
Okay, then I'll give mine in Las Vegas as Zenaida's. That's the one to go to in Las Vegas.
I guess, you know, one thing we probably should have started with is, what are we all drinking right now? We're all drinking things, I noticed.
I am drinking chai tea because I wanted to make green tea, and then I realized we were out of green tea.
I'm drinking my favorite Sweet Dreams tea, herbal tea.
I'm drinking cold Earl Grey tea that I left in the teapot and didn't realize it got cold. Well, I guess I drank a bunch of it earlier and then I forgot I made more. So it's fine.
And I'm drinking a hot toddy.
Ooh.
Fancy. Nice.
Yes, it's hot, which is good in the cold weather.
Yeah, I would have been happier if my tea was hot.
Mine is sort of lukewarm because I made it at 6 o'clock, which was also the start time of our recording. And so...
that's where you were.
Did not let it warm up that long before I was like, this is good enough. I'm drinking this so I can stay awake through recording, not to savor the taste.
I made an entire sandwich at like 5:52. So like, It's like, this is a great idea. No problem. I can fit the sandwich in.
Were you just relying on RJ being late?
No, I was feeling really bad. I thought I was going to be late. And then I opened the thing up at like exactly at like 6 o'clock or 6:01 or something like that. And no one was here. And I was like, am I in the wrong spot? Did I open the wrong one? What's going on?
RJ, I was also late, so.
Cool. Yeah, I was going to say, it's a pretty safe bet. That I'm going to be a minute or two late.
Well, you are the only one of us that works on the weekend.
Yeah, I was going to say I worked today.
Yeah, totally. Good, like, major excuses for it. Okay, favorite snacks is the next one.
Yes. Was there any favorite snacks that we haven't touched on yet that you wanted to maybe talk about?
For eating with books or just in general?
I like popcorn. I've got onto a popcorn kick.
Mm. Yeah, I like popcorn a lot too, but I don't tend to do it with books quite as often as I do it with whatever random thing I'm watching.
It's because you cover it with butter.
Well, yes.
I mean, if as long as it's a print book, it's pretty easy to do like the one-handed until you can clean up.
Mm-hmm. You reach with one hand, turn with the other.
It depends on if it's like a hardback or not, you know?
Yes.
Or like a really long book. It is the problem with reading comics. It's a lot harder to read them one-handed.
You just have to set up at like the table.
Well, they won't stay open.
Well, that's why you use your cell phone. Pop it open.
This is already too complicated.
This is why you carry around a series of small rocks to hold the pages open.
Varying sizes and shapes for different books. Your little collection.
That's why you carry rocks, RJ? I thought it was a completely different reason.
Why did you think I carry rocks?
Just in case you need to set a fairy circle.
Or skip a stone on a nice waterway.
Find your way out of a forest or cave system.
Yeah, definitely. True.
I truly used to carry small rocks, not for this purpose, because like a friend gave them to me as a gift, and I have like an emergency kit in my bag, and I just tossed them in there, and just for years just carried like 4 or 5 rocks around with me everywhere I went.
I have worry rocks sometimes, the ones that fit nice in your hand and you can rub your thumb on sometimes.
Matthew, the other option is you can sit like I usually do when I read, which is I sit on the longer side of our couch with my legs up, and then I prop the book open on my legs, and then it's easier to eat or do whatever, drink.
Yeah.
None of us have gotten to the point of having a reading lectern that we can have set up.
Not yet. Coffee would be my big one for my favorite reading thing, but not something I've done as much since sans cafes. And then similarly, like baked goods would be my favorite food to have with. But again, not something I've done so much since sans cafes. And then, then popcorn probably is up there. Yeah. So like, and then after that, it just trails off into all the different kinds of snacks there potentially are. And yes, I do have some of the ones that are a little dangerous to eat while reading, yeah, such as the Dorito realm of things.
I was going to mention when we were talking the other day, Anna, and I realized partway through our conversation, I'm like, is your tongue blue?
Yeah, I like sour gummy candies of various kinds. So I had a nice blue raspberry sour gummy candy thing going.
I was going to say, for the Dorito problem with the cheesy dust crust stuff, I did get a set of chopsticks to see if maybe I could eat the cheesies with the chopsticks and save my fingers, but it was too complicated. I decided I just wouldn't eat cheesy things with dust on them while I was reading.
Speaking of pastries, Anna, I realized, like, I moved to a new place relatively recently, and I realized there's several bakeries in my neighborhood now. And I'm like, oh, I should start going to these bakeries. And yesterday morning, I was like, this seems like a great morning to eat pastries and read single issue comic books, which is not something I've really done in a lot very much. I don't actually own very many single issue comic books, but I have a few. I haven't like regularly bought a series in like a decade almost, probably. Though like I have bought many single issue comic books, but I'm much more of a dollar bin diver. But haven't done a lot of that in the last few years. But yeah, so I went to a bakery, bought some pastries, came home, made a pot of tea, ate the pastries while reading comic books. Nice sunny day outside. It was great. It was wonderful.
He even sent me a picture that I was like, this is just your Instagram post. You just haven't bothered to put it on Instagram yet. But it's like, seriously, it looks exactly like an aspirational Instagram post.
It's not my Instagram post because my Instagram is only filled with Lego and cross stitch.
Okay, yes, it's true. This is somebody else's Instagram post.
It's like putting it up on my Instagram is like not in my brand, Anna.
You could put it on our podcasts.
You could.
There were no books in the picture, though.
Well, for this episode, though, it'd be advertising. Yeah, yeah. Totally. It was like literally two little pastries on a plate with a little butter knife and then like a pot of tea and a cup that was full of hot tea. And then if for color, there was a little cloth in the background that he had just caught that was blue colored. And it was, I was like, oh my gosh.
That was more like, I didn't bother moving that away.
I knew that was entirely accidental. That doesn't take away from the fact that it was perfect Instagram fodder.
I put a filter on it before I sent it to Anna.
He did. And he put a filter on it.
Well, now, if this is staying in the episode, now you have to put it on the Instagram.
It's true. You do.
Fine.
Okay, we are so... Where are we?
We're on question, like, 3, I think.
You know, I feel like that is... If anyone wants us to never get anything done, they need to send us, like, a list of questions. And we will never complete them.
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
That's fine.
Give us
That's
a list fine. Of questions and we will talk about everything but the actual questions.
That's true. I was just thinking, I was remembering along the lines of popcorn. I'd said it was a recent cake, but I used to come home from school and make one of those microwavable popcorn things and make a pot of instant coffee because I had no taste at that point. And this might be the reason why I'm so short, but I will never admit it. And then just read with a pot of coffee and the popcorn. It was perfect.
I don't, what happened to me then? Because I'm not taller than you, and I, like, did not get into coffee until I was in my late teens. And, like, by then I was already as tall as I was going to get.
That's because all you ate for lunch was Skittles, Anna.
Okay, no, it was M&M's. It was a giant king-size bag of M&M's. And yes, indeed, that was my entire lunch for a large portion of my high school years. But that was also after I finished growing.
Listen, if you use the lunch money to buy just, like, a pastry and a chocolate milk, that you have enough money left over that you can buy chocolate bars from the canteen.
I thought you were going to say, Megan, that you could save up your money every week and buy a book.
No. No, because we had the library.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but it doesn't have every book.
But, you know what? Having a confined amount of books that made you feel like you could actually maybe read everything was a happy fantasy for a couple of years. I didn't know there were so many books I would never read until I graduated and moved on to larger libraries, in which I realized by folly I would never read all of the books. It is a deep and terrible trauma.
But you're still trying today.
Has anyone ever been forbidden from reading at a shared meal?
Probably.
I am certain that it has come up probably many times during the course of my youth. But I don't, like, explicitly remember an instance of it.
It's like, how many shared meals have I had in the last several years, though?
Well, and how many times have you been at a shared meal where somebody actually would have forbidden you from reading? Like, I feel like that's a thing that's more of a, like, youthful.
Yeah.
But, and we haven't been to see your parents in a while. So the next time you and I go see your parents, it's liable to happen to one of us.
No, I used to think about it every time it came up, one of those, you know, panicked, oh my God, people are just looking at their phones all the time at dinner time. And I was like, you have clearly never been forbidden from accessing your preferred media during a meal time.
Mm-hmm. You know what I just remembered is when we started the book club pre-podcast, so this is a million years ago, we would just invite people over to our apartment and have reading parties where we made a bunch of tea and people brought pastries and then we would just sit quietly and read books.
It was good times.
Those are great, actually. That was a very stressful time working multiple jobs and like having these like events to look forward to where I got to see my friends, but they were super low stress and I didn't even have to really talk that much. I didn't feel like it. We could all just read our books. I was like, this is great. This is the best type of socializing right now.
Mm-hmm. Clearly not a meal where people were forbidden from reading. It was reading encouraged.
Yeah, basically enforced, kind of.
And I know we all sound really careful about not staining the books that we're reading while we're eating, but has that ever happened?
Definitely.
Oh, yeah.
So many times.
Spaghetti sauce.
Oh, man.
You can't get rid of that.
It splatters.
Oh, this wasn't even splatter. This was like just spaghetti fell off my fork onto the page of the book. And I'm like, oh, no, oh, no, oh, no.
Just full spaghetti.
This is why you shouldn't read and read at the same time.
I feel so bad when it's a library book because I am also the person who has to, like, get rid of books when people get food stains on them. It has happened a few times where I'm reading a library book. Usually it's not super egregious. It's like I'm reading and like was eating a chocolate bar and then like I touch a page and I'm like, oh no, oh, there's chocolate on the page now. Oh no. But I think probably the worst one I ever did was not a library book. It was issue number one of Ms. Marvel, the Kamala Khan Ms. Marvel series. I went and bought the week it came out and went to a coffee shop to read it and immediately spilled my entire coffee on the comic and it got soaked through. Yeah. I remember a few years later, when I was working in a comic shop, one of my coworkers was like, oh yeah, I bundled up all my, like, Ms. Marvel, I have like the first 10 issues, like from the first printing, and I'm going to try to sell them because they're worth more now. And I was like, yeah, well, that's not how I read comics, apparently.
Yeah, so my worst one is not actually necessarily eating while reading, but I used to live somewhere without running water, so I had to haul water myself. So one time hauling water, I had some library books in the car with me, and I had pushed them all into a different location, but I'd missed one and not realized it. And then I put my water containers in there, and then I proceeded to drive the distance to my house over, you know, gravel, bumpy roads and permafrost roads in Fairbanks, Alaska, got to my home, and there was water. It had managed to jam it in such a way that it actually spilled a fair amount of water, which wasn't normal, but, like, you know, bad luck time. Happened to be the one time that it really caused a pretty significant amount of water to spill out. And there was water. The book was entirely and totally soaked, like completely soaked through entirely. And it was a library book. And I literally just started working at that library. So freshly employed at this library and having to go up and be like, so this book that I borrowed.
Just if that ever happens to anybody, like, wait for it to dry before you return it. Don't, like, drop, like, a wet book on the counter.
Uh-huh. Even worse, and funny enough, I was actually the person who processed the discards. So I'm the one who, once they've actually decided they are getting rid of them, I'm the one who did all the, like, deprocessing of the discards. And I was like, this is not going back in the collection. This is gone. I'm paying for this.
Yep. I've definitely done that with water damage.
I guess a related one. Have people dropped books in bathtubs?
No. No, I don't bring books near the bathtub.
Oh, I definitely do, but I have never dropped one. I can never do it again now, because those will be the last words.
Oh, yeah, I don't trust myself enough for that.
I don't do baths, so I'm saved from worrying about that one, because I just don't like taking baths as my preferred cleaning methodology, so... And you really can't read while showering. It just does not. That's not really.
No.
Not really doable.
Even with laminated pages.
I think, though, if you're reading in the bathtub, it's not about cleaning, really, in the same way.
Well, yes. Okay. There is that.
It's about hanging out. Yeah.
Yeah, it's about hanging out. But I don't like, that's not for me. That's not my way of relaxing either. But yeah, even audiobooks don't work great in the shower because the noise of the shower, just, like, it's real hard to get it the right, like, by the time you figured out how to get it the right volume and everything, it's like, this is just not worth it. Just take a quick shower.
Yeah, I think we've cleared up the comestibles while reading, so let's talk a little bit about comestibles in the books we've been reading. So does anyone have, like, immediate reaction feelings about food descriptions in books?
So... there's a lot of cooking manga, like comics from Japan about cooking. And in general, I can't read them. Because so often, it's just about meat. And I've been a vegetarian for like a bazillion years. And I'm like, I just have no interest in reading descriptions of how people prepare and cook and eat meat. There's a few exceptions to this rule, but like I've stopped reading comics because I'm just like, I just can't deal with this.
Delicious in Dungeon being one of the exceptions, I believe.
Yes. I just read volume 5 yesterday. And it's great. But it's because, you know, if they are eating meat, it's like red dragon ham.
Yes.
You know, it's not real meat. It's like, I mean, yeah, it's a dragon. Or like it's dryad somethings, you know? And there's others. Like I feel there was one about... Drifting Dragons, I think, But that one was all specific. Like, the main character I seemed to just want to eat dragon meat all the time, and I couldn't deal with that one. Whereas in Delicious in Dungeon, it's different things, and it's like the focus of the comic in some ways, but it's not like the characters are talking about it all the time. Mm-hmm. It's like they're surviving while eating it because they're... RJ, do you want to explain the concept of the series?
Yeah, I think we've mentioned it on the show before, but Delicious in Dungeon is a manga series about a party of adventurers resembling like your average D&D party in some ways. And they are delving into this series of underground dungeons. And they are out of money at the start of the series and also have lost a party member at the start of the series. And so they can't just quit because they have to go rescue somebody that they lost. And they decide their money-saving solution is going to be to eat the monsters that they encounter in the dungeons as they defeat them. And they also take on a new party member who's like a really good cook and is really good at eating, cooking and eating monsters of various kinds. Yeah, it's a very clever series. It is like, I mean, I think it sounds a little goofy, but is clever in surprising ways. And like, even like the food stuff, just like, I love that they always give, like, like the adventure is very much about the monster and like the sort of D&D, like figuring out this sort of puzzle of how to defeat this monster. But then they show like, this is the process that we cooked it with, and here's a little chart of the like fats and proteins that it contains, like
and it's just all like mostly made up, like there's very rarely anything that's actually real in it.
Mm-hmm.
So that one's a lot of fun. Another one, and this is one that is from a company that employed me to promote their comics. So it's Otherworldly Izakaya Nobu, which comes out from Udon Entertainment. And Izakaya is a Japanese drinking snack bar, like a Japanese pub, I guess. But they're well known for having food and various food things there, as well as drinking beer and stuff and other alcohols. Anyway, so this is like a modern Japanese Izakaya that is for some reason in like kind of a medieval German town. and it's just about people eating the food, coming in and eating it. And like, I distinctly remember this person having like an otherworldly experience from eating spaghetti. That's just very fun. It's like the characters get so much joy from eating food, more joy than I ever get from eating food. and it's a really like cute little series about that. If you're into food manga, I think it's worth checking out. Sorry for making us talk about comics forever.
It's okay.
As is usual.
It's a bit of a different thing because you can see the food as well, so that plays into this sort of layering. It's not just description, it's also like...
Yes.
I have mentioned in past episodes, specifically in a couple of romance episodes, but I feel like this might also be true. I guess I was not on the show for the Cozy Mystery episode, so I've already missed that one. But for genres that I'm not that excited about or not sure where to start, specifically in some of our romance ones, I just look for something that has food in it, where the theme is food, because I know I will at least enjoy that part of the content. And I feel like I have not encountered, like, maybe I've just been lucky, or maybe I'm not that picky about like descriptions of food, where it's like, I just want to know what you're eating. It's okay if, you know, it's not richly described. Just tell me what you got.
I feel in those often there is like the recipe at the end of the chapter in the back of the book that's very easy to skip.
Mm-hmm.
RJ, though, you could probably find a cozy mystery novel about food for this month.
Oh, for contemporary fantasy?
Yeah, it just has to have, like, you know, elves in it or something.
Huh.
Like, that's got to exist, right?
I feel like I have a lot of options for contemporary fantasy. Like, we're finally chewing a genre that I enjoy. I don't need to make it more complicated for myself.
Are you saying you didn't enjoy Amish romance?
No comment. Yes.
I feel like for food, there's a lot of positive associations for me. Like, I was chatting with someone else about this topic, and they were like, oh, food descriptions, it's, you know, could be kind of like sex descriptions where it could be done really badly, but I don't think I've experienced that necessarily. I've experienced a lot of sort of positive associations with food descriptions. One of my earliest memories is Redwall by Brian Jacques, and it's kind of proto-medievalist, only with animals, so the mice are in an abbey, and they have this, like, enormous festival spread in one of the scenes, and they're eating, you know, so many different kinds of dishes, which are, could be anything to me. Like, I had never experienced dandelion wine or whatever they were talking about, but just sounded so amazingly hearty and delightful and comforting, like, you're warm and you're well-fed, and you're like, yay.
What I appreciated at those, I don't probably didn't appreciate at the time, but looking back, is that, like, since all the characters are, like, mice and other small animals, that they're not eating animals. So it's all, like, vegetarian, generally.
Probably. Yeah, I don't remember specifically.
The mice can't, like, eat a cow. There's no cows in that world.
It's true. It's true. And I don't remember, like, grasshoppers or anything that would be.
I feel like if they ate a lot of bugs, people would remember that aspect of those books more.
Probably. Does anyone else have, like, favorite food moments from reading?
Not really. I would say I fall in the realm of being somewhat indifferent to food descriptions in books. They tend to be something I sort of skim read in a lot of things. They don't elicit much for me most of the time, whether they're good descriptions or bad descriptions. Mostly it's, if it does elicit something, it is, like you say, that feeling aspect of it. Like, it's what is it imparting feeling wise? Because, like, it does not make me get senses. It does not enrich my senses, my food senses. I apparently don't have that imaginative part in my brain that's like, here's what that would taste like, here's what that would smell like, right? So I don't know, it doesn't do much for me. So I don't tend to remember much either way, but I can comment on the, like the idea of, like, eating something based on what you've read, because I definitely, as a teenager who was a very heavy, like, epic fantasy novel reader, have absolutely done the thing where I've gone and got a hunk of crusty bread and sliced myself a bunch of cheddar cheese and sat around munching on cheese and bread while reading about my adventurers, like, wandering around doing the same thing. So that is absolutely a thing I have done.
Mm. You'd probably just do that anyway, though, Anna.
Well, not anymore. Now I am, my tummy forbids me from the cheese portion of that, so...
Bummer. More bread for me.
Yes. Matthew, but that's the other thing. My tummy forbids me from the cheese portion of that, and Matthew will get to the bread before I can. So.
Oh. Hey, I don't eat all of it.
Oh, boy.
This episode is revealing too much about our relationship, Anna. Did not anticipate this.
Our second tangent about how things go down in your kitchen.
Didn't know this was the topic that would bring it all up.
Man, I got a whole cookbook about food that turned up in The Dragon Riders of Pern, that Anne McCaffrey endless series of fantasy that was actually science fiction. But the only things that I ever made out of it was, it was like a blueberry tart and a drink that was supposed to be their substitute for coffee that was called Kah or something like that. And it was basically just instant coffee and, you know, hot chocolate mix and a couple other spices to make it vaguely unusual.
I do not remember food being a thing in that series, so I'm mildly amused that there is a cookbook from that series.
I just found, I don't know if this is actually, I just tried to look this up, and I found a book called Serve It Forth, Cooking with Anne McCaffrey. And I guess it must be a fiction book, because the back cover says spiderfish stew, shrimp anarchy, surrealistic fudge.
Shrimp anarchy.
What?
Shrimp anarchy now.
Some of these seem like actual recipes. I don't know. Like, I guess fake recipes is a type of fiction.
Hmm.
Maybe someone did a parody. We're all furiously Googling now.
I'm just Googling shrimp anarchy.
The important one out of that list.
Mm-hmm.
Anthropods of Anarchy is a series where I wanted to explore and recreate the beautiful details and forms of crustaceans.
Great. So shrimp anarchy recipe, which does bring up like the Google autofill. When you type in shrimp anarchy, it's like, are you looking for shrimp anarchy recipe? Yes, I am. Brings up various shrimp recipes that do not seem to be related to the author at all. It also brings up various recipes from an anarchy forum, just like people on an anarchy forum sharing recipes.
And then Matthew just shared this link that's got various crustaceans with, like, graffiti over them.
Tattoos.
Oh, it looks like graffiti. Well, anyway, they're artwork of crustaceans that have extra images on them as they anarchy themselves up, I guess. They're very cute.
I was gonna assume that of the genres that are especially food heavy, aside from like cookbooks, which is their own genre and we probably shouldn't talk about since it's gonna show up one day in our list.
Oh no, you've cursed it, Megan.
It will never show up. That's fine.
No, I mean, it's gonna show up like next.
Didn't we already do food nonfiction?
I think we did.
Oh, did we?
Yeah, because Robert came for that episode.
Oh, yeah.
That's true. Oh, well, I don't have to worry about that then.
I wasn't even on that episode, and I remember that.
We've done so many episodes now, though.
It's true. It's true.
Oh, yeah, because we also did like non-cooking food-related books, though, for that one.
Yeah, yeah.
Non-cooking food-related books.
Uncommon Grounds, the History of Coffee and How It Transformed Our World.
Mm-hmm.
Guess you read that one.
It was a very interesting book about the business aspects, the business history of coffee.
It's true.
Oh, hey, yeah. One of the books, I still make one of the recipes that I found from a cookbook that month sometimes.
Oh, nice.
Which one?
It was from the Thug Kitchen.
Yeah. That one. Yep.
Vegan Five Spice Fried Rice. Mm-hmm. Maybe I should make that again. I think I have most of the ingredients. Oh, except the five spice powder. But, you know. One spice.
I'm sure you could sell the other spices.
Yes.
Are there any other genres that are especially food heavy, you think?
I think also like cozy mysteries, I think, as RJ said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw a cozy mystery this morning when I was at work that had noodles on the cover. And I was like, oh, man. I feel like I want to read this, but what I actually want to do is eat noodles.
Yeah, totally.
It's true. It's gotten me too. There was like something with a coconut cream cake on it, and I started reading it, and then I was like, oh no.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't the experience I'm actually hoping for at all. This is still a cozy mystery. Sorry.
Plus, they do the wonderful thing with all the puns. Like there's this one I'm just looking at right now, which is called Feta Attraction. I'm just like, I tell you, I am more in love with the puns that for the titles for cozy mysteries than with the genre itself. Like, that is the thing that will get me to pick up a cozy mystery. I probably won't enjoy the cozy mystery that much, but the fact of the pun on the cover each time will still give me joy.
Okay, so here's a question for you all. A bakery sells cozy mysteries and the food product that is on the cover. Are you more or less likely to buy the like baked good and or the novel at the same time?
Well, probably not.
But it's right there next to it. It's on display.
Big shrug emoji.
I'm trying to find like a good pun title to mention now, but I can't even think of one.
But it's a very good idea, actually. It's a cute like.
Like maybe if you could read them while you're at the bakery eating the thing.
Oh, yeah. Killer Cruelers. There you go. Flowered Felonies. Illegally Iced. Oh, my gosh. Cozy Mysteries do have the best titles. There is the best thing about them.
They are so good. I love them so much.
Honestly, just give me a coffee table book of, like, the covers.
Oh, well, the covers of all the Cozy Mysteries with all their wonderful punning titles. Yes, definitely. Please.
That's all I need. I don't actually need the thing.
There's some publisher out there. Please make this thing. Please make it. For all the cozy mysteries that you publish, just like make a coffee table book of them that like features the punniest ones.
Yes.
Looking up the noodle one I saw this morning.
Chili con carnage. Strangled eggs and ham. Oh, these are so good. Sconed to death. Okay. Anyway, please go listen to our episode about cozy mysteries.
And leave your favorite cozy mystery food pun in
the comments wherever.
Yeah.
Please do.
Hot and Sour Suspect, a noodle shop mystery.
Oh, is that, yeah, that's Vivian Chen. I was going to say the one I saw this morning was Vivian Chen. Which one was it though?
Death by Dumpling, Fatal Fried Rice, Dim Sum of All Fears. Okay, that's wins. That's the winner. Dim Sum of All Fears.
Dim Sum of All Fears is very good.
I feel like I've got to read one of these now.
Yeah, I think it was just the first one. I think it was Death by Dumpling I saw this morning. Death by Dumpling. Yeah, maybe we should just all read these.
Okay, so this is going to be our group read this summer.
Our notes for this episode is going to be hilarious.
Yeah, you just mentioned so many books, Matthew.
Yeah.
You made so much work for yourself.
I will not include all those, maybe.
We'll see. No,
definitely include Dim Sum of All Fears.
Holy shit, that's such a good title.
Such a good title.
Like, they must have been so excited when they thought that up. They're just like, ah, I need to write this book now, I guess.
I nominate this author as our what we read together this August.
Uh-huh, yep.
We all have to read a book from this author. Punalicious, wonderful book.
Sure, yeah.
Yes, definitely.
All reading one of the Vivian Chen Death by Noodles or Noodle Shop Mystery? Noodle Shop Mystery.
Noodle Shop Mystery. It's great.
Excellent. I have a whole book of drink puns here. I think we've mostly been talking about food and coffee, but somebody many moons ago bought me the Tequila Mockingbird kit of just cocktails with punny names. I've never used it. We're on camera right now. I'm pulling out the stuff that's still in the like original bubble wrap. Yeah, Tequila Mockingbird, A Cocktail of Two Cities, Crime and Punishment with the mint separated, Drankenstein.
It's Drankenstein's monster.
Well, it's going by title.
Yeah, I feel I'd be more into like, you know, the alcoholic drinks that are mixed, like the mixed drinks that are based on books or inspired by books or whatever if I drank alcohol. Mm-hmm. So since I don't, it's just like not a lot of mocktails out there based on book titles.
Yeah.
Maybe it's new business.
Oh, there probably are.
The few times in my life I am drinking cocktails, I'm usually not making them at home. Because that requires me to buy a whole bottle of alcohol for one very specific drink.
You just buy the mini ones.
I suppose. I think you have to ask a person at the counter, and I hate doing that. I would like these several tiny bottles of alcohol, please.
Okay. Well, RJ, I'll get you some.
No. I'm not going to drink them. I don't really drink anymore.
Okay. Have you ever read a cookbook with no intention of making the meals, just because something about it appealed to you?
My first ever published anything was a review of a Discworld cookbook in a Discworld newsletter. I got a review copy. I found it very hard to make anything because I was living in North America and all the recipes were using UK measurements. Uh-huh. I think I made some sort of like peppermint things. I think it was like dried frog pills, which are in the books. So there was no actual frog in them, but they were just like some sort of thing. I think I dyed the book green with the food coloring.
At least it was a review copy.
So I read that entire book because it had like, you know, lore from the world and it was fun.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's a reason, I guess, to do it.
I just remembered I have several more literary cookbooks that I own. These are ones, I wouldn't say I read these without any intention of making them. I read them and then I went, I don't think I'm actually going to make these. I very rarely make things from cookbooks. I'm not a huge cooking person. So I think I read cookbooks with every intention of maybe making something, and then it's like, nah. Sounds like fun. These are, I've got a set of three. These are vintage Providence Athenaeum, where I used to work, published their own cookbooks at one point, and they are literary themed, but like very highbrow, sort of not accessible to a general audience kind of literary puns. I was just looking. Ezra Pound Cake is probably one of the more, one of the easier one. Like some of these I don't understand. Saint Anthony's Temptation. I'm sure that's a good bit for somebody.
neoclassical cheesecake, squash pie, Menzikoff.
Two things. One is there was a cookbook that came out a few months ago last fall based on One Piece, the comic and anime. And I was really curious about where people were shelving it in their library. You know, because that's something where it's like, do you shelve that with the cookbooks or do you shelve it with the comics? And I feel, because I feel like if you put it with the comics, it will circulate more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Secondly, I've published a cookbook.
What?
Like a zine. I cook years ago. I made, I put out Food Not Bombs Vancouver, put out a cooking zine. It was called Sugar and Snails / Slugs and Spice, I think is what it was called. And it just had a bunch of like vegan recipes in it from a bunch of people that did Food Not Bombs.
Nice. Cool.
So I've probably mentioned in the food and cooking episode that we did. I probably mentioned it then.
I just want to read more titles from this cookbook, but other people can say things first.
I think I've definitely read through cookbooks that were like produced by communities as part of their fundraising activities. I remember someone made a donation to the library I was working in, and it was this whole stack of them from all over Canada, basically. And so just reading through, and they don't do any like editing or anything, as far as I could tell, over the submitted recipes. So they could be as bare bones as anything, or they could have more information as to when this person would make this recipe and for who and stuff like that. And it was just a really interesting cultural piece.
I just went and looked at the show notes from that other episode, and we're talking about all the same titles again, or at least I am. So we're in that era of the podcast where we just repeat ourselves.
That's okay. If we can't remember, probably our listeners aren't really remembering this either.
Hope so.
There's a salad recipe in here that is just titled Collected Works.
Yeah, it's nice.
It also appears there's a few recipes that are just long quotations from different works. T.S. Garp's recipe for salad dressing, and it's just a paragraph from The World According to Garp.
Okay.
Great.
Moving on.
Two more. Eggs Benedict Abridged and Epigrammatic Kebabs.
I think one of the questions we haven't touched, John, is when food is used as part of a setting or as part of a plot point within the book. And here I was thinking largely of often food repeats itself because we're living creatures and we need to eat all the time. So sometimes food doesn't occur in a book, but sometimes it repeats over and over and over again. And I've noticed this in Lee Child's Jack Reacher series, where there's always a moment in which he eats enormous amounts of breakfast and drinks like three pots of coffee. And it's part of setting this like Americana tone and also the guy's ability to put away a lot of food. He's a big man. He puts away a lot of food.
And I'm sure drinks all of his coffee black.
Yes, of course. And then in some of the police procedurals I've been reading, like there's always these moments like depending where they are, they need the coffee, they need the hot tea, they're getting takeaway, they're getting fast food on the run because they have very little personal lives left. They all, you know, all they're doing is taking care of these terrible criminal cases. And so the food comes up over and over and over again. And it really like sets the scene of where you are, the kind of things that they're eating, the way that they eat it, the, you know, what it reflects on their poor self-care, perhaps, that kind of thing.
Yeah, there is a book that I think I might have read for this podcast, though I assume maybe it was the psychological thriller episode, but I'm really not sure. Maybe it wasn't for that. I don't know, because I don't feel like this is what I read for that. I don't know. But anyways, there's a book called The Dinner, which is in translation from, well, where's it set? It's set in Amsterdam.
It's Herman Koch or someone, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Herman Koch, K-O-C-H. And it's about like, it's like there's two couples that are meeting in a fancy restaurant to have dinner, and they're having these polite conversations, but it's all about the fact that their two 15-year-old sons have done something horrifying, and they're sort of like sorting out what they are going to choose to do about this situation, and all the, they're like having their little word battles in a polite conversation over that. But really, it's revealing all sorts of things around that. Like, it, there's setting stuff that goes on all around that actual event. And it's a psychological thriller. So take it from there.
You've read that all the way back in episode 6, Anna, for Books in Translation.
Oh, wow. Really? Oh, Books in Translation. That makes sense. But when I read it, yes.
Or rather, you did not finish it all the way back in episode 6.
Yeah. That sounds like me. I was always like that. I would like to note to listeners now at episode 146, is this correct? I was that way at the beginning and I am that way still. Thank you very much. but yeah, so that's more about, like, that's not so much about the food itself, but it's about the setting of that and all the, what the social goings-on that happen within that space and how that plays into the rest of the tensions and stuff that are happening there.
Mm-hmm. Because that's, like, the public eating.
Yes.
Arena, as opposed to, like, the private eating arena.
Yes. But I think it's an interesting play on, like, how food and the spaces, the ways in which we eat and consume and share food have, you know, real cultural impact and significance and social impact and significance. And you can feel things based on how they occur if you understand the ways in which food is shared or is not shared within a society, right? So there's a lot that can be unpacked there.
Is the public eating arena where competitive eating competitions happen?
Probably, yes. Has anyone else read the new Becky Chambers series, the T-Monk and the Robot, a song for the Wild Built? No? Anyway, there's a moment in which the robot meets the T-Monk, and the T-Monk needs to eat a meal, but the robot does not need to eat a meal, and the T-Monk has, like, a moment of crisis over this because it feels really uncomfortable to sit down and not share food with the robot. So they have this little moment where the T-Monk works out a way in which he can eat with this robot, where the robot cannot actually eat, but still fulfill this, like, social expectation and ritual around the whole eating process.
Yeah. I feel like there must be some cultural traditions in which unpacking all of this is more of a standout of, like I feel like, at least in North American culture, the food traditions are so varied and broken apart and specialized to unique families and situations in so many different ways that it is hard to have the same messaging, except in very small numbers of situations. So, yeah. But there are some places where that's not as true.
When we played Unpacking, the video game, we would unpack the kitchen, and that seeing the kitchen implements and things that the person brought from house to house really kind of helped you have a feel for the character that you were playing as, like one aspect of that. So It can be a really effective, like, storytelling thing in certain circumstances. Everyone should go play Unpacking. I guess it's not a book, though.
It was one of my media of the year for last year.
Mm-hmm. At least one person listened to that episode and went out and bought it and played it.
Hey!
Nice.
Yay!
Influencers.
Shush! Influencers who totally don't understand Instagram and, like, but do put filters on their food pictures that they send to one individual person.
Influencing one person.
I mean, that says something.
We're one individual at a time influencers.
I was going to say, it's actually even better when there's four of us managed to influence one person.
Quarter of a person at a time influencers.
Are we done?
Yeah, I don't know.
We're pretty much done. I was trying to think of books in which food played a plot point, but the only thing I can think of is Narnia, the moment where the brother sells out his siblings for the Turkish delight, and then also because later discovering what Turkish delight actually was and how it was not like a deliciously chocolatey, peanutty thing that I had always imagined for like 20 years and being like, oh, this was a lightly flavored item that would not, like, I would not sell out all of my family for this particular sweet. I'm sorry, it's nice, I guess, but not not worth that.
So what one would you? Like a Snickers bar? Like Twizzlers,
one of those Reese's cups with the Reese's pieces inside of it.
Well, I had this memory of this other book where the evil character gets his strings, almost explicitly strings, into the main character by feeding her chocolates that have like evilness in them or something. I have no idea where I got this image from.
That sounds familiar.
So like nougat?
Heresy.
I was going to mention Harry Potter, which is, you know, not a series that I enjoy like discussing and promoting anymore because the author is terrible and I don't want to increase her cultural capital, but is definitely an example of food and fiction that contributed to the setting and...
That they sell.
Mm-hmm.
That they sell, yeah. I mean, yeah. Also, yeah, produced merchandise.
Yeah.
It is true that that may not be somebody we want to really add to the cultural impact of in many ways, but mm-hmm. It is true that food played some important roles in there and was very imaginatively described and is unique, genuinely unique. Right. Whereas like many of the fantasy foods I've read about are just not really genuinely unique in some of the ways that those were, or fun, like creative and fun in ways that were interesting to imagine experiencing.
And I feel like the context that it's introduced in is also important to those, because I feel like I don't remember like what things they ate like in the cafeteria at Hogwarts. What I remember is like
the train ride.
Yeah, the candies they get and share on the train. And that's like very much feels like a school thing where like you are like meeting other kids for the first time and they're like, do you know about these candies? And you're like, oh, no, I'm new here. And they're like, oh, let me hook you up with the best candies.
Okay. I'm really curious now. Are there any other books that have actually inspired foods, like foods that you can purchase?
In the real world?
Yeah.
I mean, Rowling is really good at cashing in. So there's probably other authors that could have gone that route and maybe didn't, but
I mean, there's probably a promotional something somewhere, right? But like I'm thinking of like outside of the promotional space where some large company bought like movie rights to it and then chose to make promotional something something candies or something. I'm trying to think.
I mean, I know there's like official cookbooks for all sorts of series. Like I'm sure there's like a Hobbit and Lord of the Rings cookbook. They're also not like as a lot of foods in like fantasy books are not as commercial, like you're not as easily packageable as the ones in Harry Potter because mm-hmm. it's set in like the 90s. And so it's kids like buying snacks on a train.
Totally.
There's not like an official butterbeer from Harry Potter, but like that's one that, gets unofficially made and sold, all over the place, including Stormcrow in Vancouver, rest in peace, made a very, very good butterbeer, but they are not around anymore.
I can't think of anything that was as big enough to make it a thing or had unique enough food items that it would work for.
Mm-hmm.
So here's one that's funny. I remember from my childhood, Phileas Fogg branded potato chips. Which were just like various international flavors because he was the main character from Around the World in 80 Days. And so it was like, yeah, here's like other country food flavored potato chips. It looks like they still exist. And it's like, yeah, here's the Mexican ones, the Italian ones, the American ones, the whatever. So
I'm just trying to Google. Oh, no, it's just bringing me books about cereal. I was trying to Google if there are any, because it's so easy to churn out like special edition cereals. Like there's been so many like based on TV shows and films and cultural moments. Like there was a football player who shortly had his own cereal brand. But I don't. Yeah, I think there's. I'd have to fuss with keywords for a while before I found any.
There's got to be some Willy Wonka things out there.
Oh, yeah, I guess so.
Oh, true. Yes, absolutely.
That aren't just literally repackagings of things. There's got to be some actual, like, unique.
There's a whole Wonka, like, brand
line.
Of,
yeah, there's a
line
brand.
Of products, yeah.
I found one. That's very strange. It is Ezekiel 4:9 cereal.
Wait, is that like Bible food?
Which is based on a Bible verse. And you can buy bread and stuff as well. And apparently it's based on take wheat and barley, beans and lentils, millet and spelt, put them in a storage jar and use them to bake bread for yourself.
So it's a multigrain.
I guess so. Yeah. There. I guess.
Interesting.
So, yeah, it's like the list of food inspired by books contains Harry Potter and the Bible. And
it's a little Charlie in the Chocolate Factory, yeah, thrown in.
I think it makes sense, yeah, that the other example we can think of is Wonka, because it's candy. Yep. Because candy is very, like, cheap to produce and popular to sell, and you can package it easily in a way that you can't, like, you know, a hearty bread from a from a fantasy novel.
Totally.
True. Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, if you can think of any, listeners, please tell us. I'm really curious. I'm sure there's something very obvious that we've missed.
Okay.
Cool. I think that's it.
St. Anthony's Temptation is a reference to a Salvador Dali painting, but we can just put a link to that in the show notes.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Book Club for Masochists. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you like the show, subscribe so you never miss an episode, and consider giving us a positive rating and or review. If you've already done that, thank you.
For all our URLs and social media accounts, the 4 and our name is a numeral. You can go to our website at bookclub4m.com, join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/bookclub4m, and find us on Twitter and on Instagram at bookclub4m, where you can expect to see a post from Matthew shortly. Our email address is bookclub4m@gmail.com.
We're really making it so you can't edit around it.
Oh, you'd like to think that.
On our website, you can find show notes that will provide links to things that we mentioned, social media info for everyone who appeared on this episode, and our genre-based book lists of titles by authors of color.
You can suggest a genre or title for us to read, or request a recommendation from us. We have a form you can fill out on our website, bookclubforum.com. We can't make any promises on reading your specific suggestion, but if you ask for a reading recommendation, we will give you one.
All opinions are our own and do not reflect our places of employment, if they exist.
Our theme music is To Arrakis by Dark Sun from the Free Music Archive.
New episodes are the first and third Tuesday of every month.
Join us again on Tuesday, April 5th, when we'll be discussing the genre of contemporary fantasy.
Then, on Tuesday, April 19th, we'll be talking about our non-book club-related media consumption. So, we do actually do that.
Mm-hmm. It won't be food this time.
I mean, it might be.
I mean, unless it's noodles. I mean, it could be noodles.
Yeah, that's the one we've accepted. Noodles are
books. Yeah, noodles. Yeah, noodles are books. Are you good with that, or you want to do it again?
I've got a week to re-record it.
Okay.
You know, I say I've got a week to record something, and I will wait 8 days to do it. It'll be...
Yeah, you would do it the night before.
100%. That's when it's going to happen.
Gives you a full week to, like, ignore it.
To edit us saying teeth, teeth, teeth again. Oh my gosh, we're terrible. Awful. What are we doing?
Busy looking up shrimp anarchy.
It's not rocket science, it's just coffee.
Just more work, more effort, yeah. I should stop recording.